Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I'm your host, Nick Shutt. Happy to have my friend Peter Dugta here with me. Peter, how are you today, sir?
Doing well, Nick. How are you?
Man, it's another day in paradise. Thanks so much for asking. I really appreciate you taking a couple minutes to hop on and chat with us today. We're going to talk all about barriers and challenges to AI implementations with small and mid-sized businesses today. For everybody that doesn't have the fortune of knowing you yet, do you mind just giving folks a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of what got you here?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the time to talk about this, Nick. So I'm Peter Dutka, founder and CEO of Dual Logic. We position ourselves as an end-to-end AI integration consulting firm. We support small to mid-sized organizations across SaaS, nonprofits and associations, as well as professional services. We got started about 6 months ago when, I was fresh off of a fairly long stint in SaaS. I was working as a product leader at an education technology company. And we were actually, being a pretty early stage organization, we had the opportunity when ChatGPT hit to really start experimenting. ChatGPT hit the mainstream, I should say. We had the opportunity to really start playing around with and really tinkering with these tools and capabilities pretty early, right? So we had kind of the opportunity to be pretty much very much an early adopter, first mover kind of organization. And ultimately, I mean, that was really kind of my sort of like gateway experience into recognizing like the power of what's possible with these tools. Because we'd started trying to incorporate ChatGPT and OpenAI's APIs into our product, but also some of the challenges, right? So like, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with, like just this stuff is moving so fast. And even back then, like we were going through rounds of trying to build it into our product, and the cost of using these APIs was changing, was coming down, fortunately, right? But the models themselves were changing. The techniques that you were using to incorporate them into your product were changing. And so it was a huge wake-up call for me and saying, okay, well, if you're going to want to actually start incorporating these into your organization, like it's not going to be easy to do, right? And so that's ultimately what we're focused on with Dual Logic. And really as part of that, like kind of being able to come alongside the organizations that like they're maybe not big enough to have a chief AI officer. They're not big enough to have a learning and development team that is going to be focused on this day in and day out. Like a lot of the organizations that we talk with, like, this is like figuring out the AI strategy, quote unquote. Like, that's something that's right now getting done off the side of someone's desk, right? Because no one asked them if they, the big tech companies should just rewrite the operating system for how this stuff works, for how every, pretty much eventually, at least, everything about how their org operates it should change. And so this is stuff that they're having to adjust to, and we're having the benefit and the opportunity of coming alongside them and helping them figure it out as they go.
It's amazing, man. No, I really appreciate it. Appreciate your background and perspective. Thank you so much. And as I mean, that's a great question for somebody like me who's running multiple small businesses.
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges, and I mean, what does AI adoption even look like for some organizations? Small, mid-sized companies, not the Fortune 100s, not these 10,000 plus behemoths, folks like a couple hundred people.
Yeah. So I mean, I think like the important thing to keep in mind is that like what you see and hear on LinkedIn, on X, on some of these other social platforms, like it's definitely not, I think that can create a perception that everyone else in the world is so much further along in doing this stuff, right? And in actuality, what we find from a lot of the conversations we're having is that like many leaders, particularly in organizations that were not tech forward or tech native to begin with, like they are still just now starting to figure out how this is actually going to work for them, right? I will say that it's very different for a lot of the folks that I chat with, sort of friends of mine that are in SaaS companies and in organizations that have been built around technology from the get-go. Like there's sort of this real dichotomy that's starting to appear where it's like, if you're in a SaaS company, if you're in like product engineering, QA, like a lot of the people, and this is probably borne out by from your listeners, it's like They've already started playing, using ChatGPT or Claude or Copilot or they're sort of the analogs that are in the sort of the more functionally aligned tools like a GitHub Copilot or a Cursor. Like they're probably already starting to do that, right? But if you're not part of one of those organizations, like I've met a couple CEOs, a couple heads of different functions at different organizations that have really started digging in with their teams and getting their teams really fully empowered and enabled. But it's certainly not the norm, right? I'd say like probably about one out of five are of like the CEOs that we're engaging with, CEOs, VPs of different functions are the types where like they've actually gotten significant adoption. Their team members are actually starting to use these tools on a day-to-day basis. A lot of folks are really just at the starting point of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I also see a bear. I see that bear that same pattern with just like people, not just
Yeah.
organizations, people. Like I think, and I find it very interesting as somebody that walks in multiple worlds, right? So like I'm in the tech forward, tech, very tech forward space doing this. I'm in the tech space with Artemis and EVLG. But then like Healing My Wellness is a mental health company. And so like it's and like I'm going to a mental health conference later this week. And when you look at just the di and like I also like I had cigars with a couple of friends a few weeks
Yeah.
ago. Like a couple of them are mechanics, another guy manages warehouses, and like it's just so far from their world that they don't even understand what's about to hit them.
Yeah.
Right. And see it. And I think that's playing out like at a personal level and organizational level as well. It's really, really interesting to kind of watch everybody figure this out in real time.
Yeah.
Right. So how, man, how has, I know you've been doing this for a while and you had a very you were fortunate to be in the product space, in a younger organization that had the ability to like really early start integrating some of the generative AI into the platform. How between all of that over the last few years, how have you seen the conversation change within organizations?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that it's probably followed a pattern that you've seen in a lot of the organizations you're calling on, Nick, right? When going back to like early 2023, this stuff was cool. It was interesting, but it was sort of a little unbelievable, like what it was actually doing. And like the quality of the models was such that, you still saw a lot of neat, like that's where you really did need to be thoughtful about how you were prompting it, right? Because A, the quality of the models wasn't really good enough just to sort of handle what you randomly tossed at it. And the context windows were a lot smaller, right? So what we kind of talk about is sort of like the short-term memory, if you will, of how an AI works. Like that's really what a context window is. It was small enough that, you couldn't really depend on an AI being able to reliably call or reference different pieces of information that you shared with it, previously in a very, very long chat, right? And so that's where I think like a lot of leaders over the course of like 2023 kind of said, okay, well, this is cool, but like this is still at the in the realm of like kind of technical plaything, right? Certain people maybe are like tricking out their workflow, but it's only around more sort of isolated tasks. And there certainly wasn't the enterprise capability around limiting or preventing any models from using the information you were providing to it for model training. So enterprises were generally speaking not ready to dive in, right? Fast forward though, right, over 2024, like I think as you and your listeners can probably attest, it's like you started hearing some pretty big names, right? So like Walmart, Moderna, like more recently, a lot of folks in highly regulated industries, like Moderna for sure. You're starting to hear it more and more on like earnings calls that it's like, okay, we're now starting to really see benefit and see traction, right? And that trend I think really picked up and started to continue over the course of 2024. And so, but what was interesting was that a lot of those organizations, again, like they had been incorporating technology into core parts of their business for a long time, right? And they were also very, very well funded, right? So there, it's while those are interesting examples to pull from, right? I think you still weren't quite seeing the tooling get to a point where you were really ready for sort of broad adoption, right? I think the other challenge to this that I think often goes kind of under sort of it doesn't get talked about as much is that it's like this interacting with this kind of technology, like just like different waves of technology beforehand, right? Like there's sort of a new type of literacy that you almost need, right? So like when all of a sudden we went to like social media, then it like the concept of like digital literacy became that much more important because anyone could start making like pushing out content and information and potentially positioning it as like real news, right? So that sort of literacy, I think, still is in the process of kind of being worked out, right? Like you're seeing like a good solid set of prompts and prompt engineering tactics will help you with a lot of that. But you're still seeing, I think, a lot of people where just the medium and the way that they interact with these LLM tools, like how I often talk about it is like it's kind of like putting someone in front of a blank chat interface is kind of like taking someone who's never painted before, walking them up to a canvas and asking them to just start painting and expecting it to be good, right? There's like this like translation that doesn't always come naturally or easily. And so I think it's taken a little bit of time, right? It's taken the combination of specific like examples, mind you, like a lot of these examples, it's like people are sharing the metrics, they're sharing the outcomes, they're not really sharing like how they do this stuff, right? But it's taken a lot of those like pot examples of like positive outputs and impact, and people just generally getting much more comfortable and familiar with the medium itself and the interface, or people, writ large, like within organizations, to start to say, okay, like we're getting more comfortable with this idea. We're ready to start jumping in. But still, there's like a lot of challenges around fluency, right? Like, how do I actually connect the capabilities of what an LLM is actually good at and what it's not good at, more importantly, almost, with tangible applications and use cases within my organization, right? And I feel like that's where a lot of most organizations probably, right, that are particularly those that are not sort of tech forward, tech native, that's where a lot of them are right now. They're in that process of saying, okay, has the tooling advanced enough for us to jump in? Is it ready for us, quote unquote? Has it matured enough? And the answer to that is yes on some things, no on something else, right? Or on some other things. But how do we identify which is which, right? Where are we? How do we plot a course through all these different pieces of info to really establish a strategy that makes sense?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting the dichotomy, the difference between the larges and everybody else, right? They obviously have a whole lot more data to work with, but they also have a lot more margin for error. Right? Like Walmart can spend $10 billion on a failed AI implementation project, and their stock price might take a hit, maybe. I don't know. It might not even happen, but like there's a lot of companies that can't even afford 1% of that, let alone to waste 1% of that, right?
Totally.
And then what do you, I mean, you mentioned like, what LLMs are good at and what they're bad at. Can you give me an example of both?
So I would say that this is so, for those listeners that may be listening to this like 6 months, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 12 months from now, right? This answer is going to age for sure, right? And it's probably going to age very poorly. But right now, circa summer 2025, right? What you're seeing LLMs still be very good at is brainstorming ideas, creating content, analyzing content, and giving feedback, right? Those are sort of the four core things that we often talk about when we're running like training and enablement engagements. And that, increasingly that can come in the form of multiple different mediums, right? In areas where you're asking an LLM to come up with an idea, it's like the randomness that comes in from how these things are built is great, right? When you give it enough context, you can ask it to generate or summarize a document, a presentation, a report, right? An analysis, right? Where things really still fall down in a lot of cases, and again, this is changing more and more with each new model that comes out, is high capacity, basically like very complex reasoning where I would not, for example, use this to generate a sort of a win-loss analysis or like a break-even analysis on like an investment I was making for the business, something like that, right? I'd use it to help do the research. I'd use it to help frame up and identify the best practices using AI-powered search tools. But there's still aspects that it's like I might have it draft something, but I'm certainly not going to be letting that just run and be the sole output.
No, absolutely. I think, the two really interesting use cases that I've had a lot of fun with is one, giving it like journal articles, scientific journal articles, right? So, because like I find that level of scientific research fascinating, but I also have no interest in reading, 25 pages that I feel like are intentionally written in a way to confuse non-scientists, right?
Unfortunately, maybe,
It's just not accessible, right? And so like that's an absolutely an area that I'll, have it summarize, to your point, summarize this and tell me what's important out of it, right? And then ask questions and have it like, I'm not going to say dumb it down, but make the language more accessible. Another one I like is around litigation. I'm sorry, not litigate, not litigation, around laws and bills. Like, there's a big, beautiful bill that's apparently working its way through Congress right now.
I have heard.
And there's a lot of, I mean, it's like 1,000 pages, and I also don't have enough legal knowledge to understand all how it all connects to everything and what it actually means. So things like that, where it's like you running it through and having it summarize and highlight and give me specific pieces is very helpful. But the other side, like I don't ask it to do math for me ever. I don't trust a language machine to do math well.
Totally.
But that's it's really, really interesting. And then as we are sitting here in summer of 2025, what are some of the trends that you're seeing? Like as far as emerging AI trends, like emerging, new areas of development. What are you seeing that people, you think business leaders should be paying attention to?
No, it's a great question. I mean, I'd love to see you as a business owner who've got your hands in a couple of different ventures. I'd love to kind of hear your take on this as well. But I mean, what I see is really one of the biggest trends to pay attention to through the back half of this year is really interoperability, right? So it's just the idea of being able to connect these systems in safe, responsible ways to other tools that we are using every day, right? Like, for those that may not have caught this, like OpenAI released a set of connectors to that allow you to basically connect ChatGPT to HubSpot, as an example, right? I saw, one of the thought leaders who I respect very much in SaaS, like Jason Lemkin, like, he was talking very quickly thereafter about, how he can now, like he never logs into HubSpot, right? It's the CRM that his organization has been using for years, right? But he now, just through the chat interface, he can ask about high performing reps. He can ask, which are the best deal, which are the deals that have closed most recently. What, summarize for me some of the trends in deals that we're winning versus losing, right? He no longer has to do the work, put in the effort to get the of going to the CRM, running a query, running a bunch of filters, figuring out, okay, well, what data am I really looking for and how do I get that right? Like, as he described it, it's like this is sort of how it felt like a CRM should probably always work, which is you should just be able to talk to your system, your tools, right? And have it give you the answers. And so I think as some of these different frameworks, which you're seeing more and more all the time, right? You've got And every organization's kind of coming out with their own, right? There's like Model Context Protocol, there's agent to agent, like each major tech company is probably going to have their own before too long. But all of them at their core are really about helping you connect these systems to connect these tools rather to other systems that you're using on a regular basis, right? And I feel like that's really where people are going to start seeing the value, because asking someone who's maybe a little bearish on like what the potential or opportunity of these tools are, to then go outside of their normal workflow, get to, learn a new sort of language of how to go about their tasks, and then from there, basically pull their output back into their other workflow, and it may not actually be all that right. Certainly without a little bit more massaging. For some people, like for the majority of people, I think at least, like that's not something they're willing to do. But if you put them into it, like people will generally understand the idea of like, okay, chat with your system, I think a lot easier. And so that is something I think that I'm particularly excited about. But how about you, Nick? What about on your end?
I think interoperability is huge. Absolutely. I think that having the like the question I was thinking while you were talking is like, does that mean like Zapier is going to go out of business? Is because their whole business is facilitating system interoperability. I mean, they probably won't because they're so big already, but I don't know their competitors, but I know that they have them, and I know that the smaller ones may or may not survive this, right? So really interesting. I think as far what I'm looking for, what I'm really interested in is how is it like. And so one of my concerns, like I've been looking at AI solutions for one of my companies for a while now. Like it's a healthcare company, my mental health company, a healthcare company. My concern, frankly, is and has been, it's been twofold. It's been one, how do you force people to not just use generated content in the workflow, right? Because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that if I gave, any of these systems, call it Claude, access to all of our like our session, if we recorded sessions and had the agent in there and had it listen, it could absolutely make our note process faster of writing clinical notes. Because if I'm sure if anybody else doesn't know, if you don't write a clinical note, which is large, usually the is as time consuming as the actual session, more so for some of these complex ones that doctors like a doctor will see. But how do you limit us from like a liability perspective, right? I think that as these tools become more accessible and e easier for small and mid-sized businesses to integrate from a cost perspective, that will be like that's something that I'm really interested in, is like how do you go about ensuring, because you like again you and I know that it's not going to be great on the first pass usually. Right. And when you have the like if my notes aren't done properly and we get audited, like the government can just like not like can just take back money because we're not doing things right, we're not checking the boxes. And so that's like a level of exposure that concerns me, be not because I don't trust my people, but because I trust humans. I trust our human nature to not go above and beyond largely some of the time, right? And just accept that it's right. But is there too much detail on the note? Is there not enough? You have to understand, like when you're writing these clinical notes, especially as a therapist, you have to think who's going to be reading this ever, right? Because it could, God forbid, somebody ends up in trouble and then their therapy records are subpoenaed and then like and then like that opens a whole other can of worms, right? That's before you get to compliance with COMAR, the Maryland's mental health regulations, or compliance with our accrediting body, or compliance with federal government regulations. It's a complex regulatory environment, and my concern is people are going to look at the most time-consuming part of their job and not and like take a shortcut as opposed to doing it. And so that's absolutely something that I'm really interested in. I'm also really interested in looking at some of these systems that are in like are either HIPAA protected data is and how can I potentially plug in, you know, a LLM into my system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have it look for, like, do compliance checking and things behind folks. That's something I'd love, but I also don't know how you go about building that. You know, and there's also, yeah, and it's funny. I was actually just watching some like deepfake stuff that a friend of mine made like a year ago, and like you don't realize how fast things are improving until you look at something that was made a year ago and understand that in the mouth and how it's moving and the voice and how it sounds, like you can tell that it's generated. Stuff that's coming out now, you can't tell that it's generated. And these are like silly clips on Reddit or Instagram or something. Like, if that's not even state of the art now, what I'm curious is, like, what's going to happen a year from now? From like, where are we going to be a year from now? Where are we going to be even be 5 years from now? Is mind blowing, right?
Totally.
And so, you know, I think the one thing that you also touched on earlier is digital literacy within people. That's something that I'm very passionate about. I think that there is a level of digital literacy required to like operate in the modern world. And when you look at what's happened to digital to populations that are not literate from a di like digitally literate, when they get like social media brought to them, and the propensity for violence and like you know and ethnic cleansing that comes in and like empowered by this technology to non-digitally literate societies is terrifying. What concerns me here is especially when you look at the political climate of the last decade, like I think the US were a pretty literate society from a digital perspective, like at least 65% of us, maybe 70% of us, right? Very few are illiterate when it comes to AI, like truthfully literate. And I think that, like, and that's not a US phenomena, right? That's a global phenomena because this is so new. Like, and maybe it's my pes like the I'm not going to say my pessimism, but just being in a little bit of a pessimistic mood today, I'm really curious as to what's going to happen over the next 12 months, or you know, call it 6 months, as it relates to misinformation, right? And as it becomes more accessible and easier to generate this spoofed content, right, and make that content more believable. What will that like whether and whether it's in like business, in a part somebody's life, in you know like in like you know geopolitical affairs, like how does this level of not, because every time I get a video now, somebody sends me something, I just start wondering if it's AI or not. But I also know I'm in the extreme minority when it comes to thinking like that.
But also I think that it's like, you know, I mean, I think that you do, I mean, to your, to, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that maybe you're the minority. Hopefully you're not the minority, right? Because I mean, at the end of the day, like, I think these are very real concerns, right? To your point about like you know, a clinician like completing notes, right? Like it feels like there's almost going to need to be some like new version of a CAPTCHA, right? Where it's like as you are going through a mental health, you know, session of some sort, right? You as the clinician are going to be present. Well, you'll need to be present. I'm sure you're probably already are, depending on the different systems you're using, like presented with the AI generated notes, right? Which then you as the clinician are having to sort of certify or authorize, right? But to your point, like without that, right, it is very dangerous. It becomes a very slippery slope where it's like the tools that we build in for convenience into these tools end up becoming just enablers of non-compliance, enablers of, you know, basically a whole set of behaviors that really just incur and create a lot more risk to the organization, right? And
Absolutely.
so, you know, and then it's like I think the deepfakes have, unfortunately, like those have been a growing concern for sure. And I think that it's like it's absolutely going to be incumbent upon regulators and educators, right, to start saying, okay, well, like what's a path out of this? What's a way out of this process, right? I think a sort of a more meta point to all this is that I think you're going to see like face-to-face human interactions, right? Like, this was always kind of, this was already kind of happening coming out of the pandemic, is like you started to see people started to be like, oh no, like let's, return to office is its own thing for sure, right? But universally, I think coming out of the pandemic, we recognized that there was value and meaning in like connecting face to face, person to person as humans, right? And I think that to everything you said about the way that AI can go, might go, I think that's going to become one of the sort of meta or one of the trends as well that comes out of this is that it's like people are going to appreciate that it was a human-made thing, that there was a human-to-human interaction as part of this stuff for sure.
Yeah, so I think interpersonal skills will that their importance will continue to increase, right? In a world that AI is doing a lot of the stuff, like the human connection becomes ever more important, right? And ideally you have more time, as a result. But I historically, based on what I know about like technological development, that's probably not going to happen. For instance, the when like 100 years ago, when they were first introducing like vacuums and like electric vacuums, things like that, to help a house, like help at the time it was a housewife keep a clean house. When they had all those tools, do you think that they could work and they would have all that extra time? The standards for cleanliness improved, increased. And dirt, like it's easier for you now to clean like this. So no, you just need to be cleaner, right? And I think that that's going to be part of it, for sure. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But I do think that our method of like school in general has been horribly antiquated for probably at least 50 years, if not longer. Like what? Why do you need to know the quadratic equation anymore? Like when you could, it was that way when you could Google it, right? Now, why do you need to know how to write an essay?
So, I mean, I think that's a it's a totally reasonable kind of question to ask, right? But I think, because this is what we've actually like in its own sort of interesting, somewhat unintentional way, right? Like we've kind of experimented with this with dual logic, right? So like, we had a couple like it's summer, right? So we've got, summer is intern season. So we've had a couple of interns. Shout out to them if they've been listening because they've been super helpful. But we've had a couple of interns starting with us over the course of the last couple of weeks, right? And it's been really interesting because like these are folks that are new to the business world, right? So they don't have that sort of basis of experience, right? So yes, they've been, as a function of working at our company, like they've been given access to a whole bunch of different really cool tools. Like we just by virtue of the work we do, we kind of need to maintain licenses and regular use of a lot of these sort of general purpose tools like a Perplexity, a ChatGPT, Copilot, Claude, etc., right? And so our interns, they have access to the latest and greatest tools. They have access on tr to training on how to use them, right? But at the end of the day, like there are certain things that it still takes a like human-to-human training session. It still takes a human-to-human walkthrough for them to really, excel at, right? And that's just because like I think that, going back to your like quadratic equation example or like an essay, right? It's like it actually takes like practice and like real use. And sometimes at like learning things the slow way, learning things the hard way, so that you understand either how to judge whether or not the outputs are valid or trusted, right? Or you have a better sense of which tool you need to use in which context, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm actually, yeah, go for it.
No, I 1000% agree with you, right? I absolutely do. To me, the value, so like I didn't use, I went to a like a different school growing up, right? I wasn't allowed to use a calculator in math classes until my, I think, sophomore year of high school. So I had to do everything by hand, right? I had to write multiple essays like every day, right? And the value in that and in the doing them by hand. And like I calculated pi by hand at one point, right? Like to do like the way they did in like, in ancient Greece. The value of all of those things and the value I got was not the ability to write or the ability to do math. It was the ability to sit down and logically think through how do you lay this out? It's the logic, right? And in a world where you no longer need to think about how do you structure this, right? How do you teach kids to think without giving them work, like meaningless work to do? How do you teach them to think, right? And I think that I don't believe that our current education system is set up to do that.
No, I
Right.
agree. Yeah.
And so
Yeah.
I don't have answers. And I know we got a little sidetracked, but I don't have like an
Oh.
answer about how should we go about it, right? But like, because you're absolutely right, to use these tools, you need to think about like what is it you want from an end product and how do you work backwards to there, right? And if it's 80% of a clinical note that you need somebody else to review, what do you need to give it to get you 80% of the way there and have it come out in the right format, in the right form, with all touching all the right things to make sure it's compliant, all of that, right? If you don't haven't done that over and over and over again manually, you're not like you, if you don't understand the logic behind it. And that's where my concern comes from, is that you don't have to think to write a, 10-page essay about, the set, the First Punic War and why it was so important, right? Like you don't need to, like you can just literally go into ChatGPT right now and say, write this, and it'll pop it out for you, right? But that cheats the underlying message of what you were trying to learn, which was how do you sit down and think about this and structure it all? And yeah, so like I don't know. I don't know how to solve that problem.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know how to solve that problem either, but I agree with you. Like you're ultimately cheating yourself, right? Because when you're truly offloading the analysis, the creativity, the critical thinking of like figuring out this stuff out, right?
Yeah, man. Then you end up like one of those dudes in Wall-E. I don't
Yeah.
know if you ever saw that. But that's
Yeah.
like,
No, I didn't think of that. Yeah.
yeah, man, absolutely. But dude, back to small mid-sized organizations, man. What are some of the common applications you're seeing in these in that that small mid-sized organizations are using? That are like actually having an impact on them and their workflows.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that like there's, so I will say that it's like there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of noise about this stuff, right? Because you see and it's hard to kind of separate signal from noise, right? Because what you can punch a search into Google or Perplexity, right? And you can find a bunch of example stats about such and such company used, incorporated generative AI and increased output by some ridiculous percent, or saves time by some crazy amount of hours, right? And you can oftentimes sort of maybe kind of read between the lines. I'm like, okay, well, what tools were they saying they used, and like, what's the general type of work that they're doing? And you can start to kind of piece some things together. But generally speaking, like a lot of organizations, when the tricky thing about this, right? And this is what I think is going back to what I said about sort of like what you see on like LinkedIn and X and other organizations, is that like a lot of times when organizations are succeeding at this stuff, like there are succeed, they view it as competitive advantage, or now some part of their sort of like trade secrets, if you will, right? So it's actually pretty hard if you're just kind of going out there, like reading the news, reading the latest sort of industry reports, to understand, okay, well, what are people actually doing, right? But what I will say is that, a lot of my perspective is like born out of actually having like, deep one-on-one conversations about, okay, well, what are you up to within your organization? How's that going? What's working, what isn't, right? And so what I will say is like a lot of organizations are still, again, this is, there's sort of two different camps to this, right? There's the tech forward organizations where they've said, all right, no, we're going deep on a general purpose LLM. We're already starting to think about more function specific tools. Like it could be like a cursor if you're for your software development team, or it could be like a writer or some of the like HubSpot tools for like a marketing team. But for particularly for the like less tech forward organizations, a lot of them are still just now, from what I'm seeing, like in the process of just getting a general purpose LLM, like a Copilot, ChatGPT, or Gemini, really fully enabled and deployed across their organization, right? And so, you know, that's what I would say is like, okay, like not necessarily like the most common application, like that's where a lot of people started, right? From there, you can absolutely start moving into workflow automation platforms and other things. But if you haven't already done that, right? If you haven't said, all right, well, if we're a Microsoft organization, we're just going to enable Copilot. If we're Google, we're going to enable Gemini. We're going to get people really using that. That is where folks should start, because that then becomes the gateway to what comes next. Because you start to free up people's time and you give them general fluency and familiarity with what's possible. And then you can start to figure out what the applications are, what applications are going to make the most sense for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Can you give like an example of how you've seen somebody like give just listen, yeah, let's go like, improve some of their business operations with tools.
So, one example, right, is we've been working with an association based here in the DC space, or in DC. They've got offices elsewhere, where we've been, you know, they're similarly like they're a Microsoft organization, and so pretty common pattern to a lot of what we're seeing and hearing kind of across the industry is that, you know, some of these folks, like, they have these tools ostensibly already enabled, right? If you're a Microsoft organization, they already have your Microsoft already has access to all of your proprietary information, right? And they're very clear and good about saying, okay, well, we're not going to be training our models on it. But so no one was actually using Copilot. And so, you know, we came alongside this organization in particular and just said, okay, well, let's get everyone actually using Copilot on a regular basis, right? Let's give you guys the support in identifying what your use cases should be. And so within those use cases, it really is, you know, what's currently taking up the most time, what's taking up a ton of effort, and what are some of the workflows that are like really, really important, right? And within those, where do you have need for brainstorming ideas, creating content, analyzing content, getting feedback, right? So it's like that's sort of like the framework that we helped kind of put in place and helped people put together, and then just said, okay, like let's start building out prompts that help you delegate parts of your workflows to the tool that you're using. And so, you know, those are really, and then from there, it becomes the kind of thing where folks are really, once they start getting a little bit of familiarity and a little bit of fluency with this stuff, we often find that you start to get some momentum, which is pretty cool to see, because people start to see like, okay, I can save myself a ton of time, right? Or I can get the feedback from certain team members, certain stakeholders that I may not, you know, previously, I might need to have scheduled a meeting to actually get the perspective from. And we shouldn't necessarily re replace that feedback, that session where you're getting their perspective, but it helps you at least kind of do some of the blocking and tackling, do some of the due diligence before you're actually moving the deliverable further along.
Yeah, absolutely. And how have you seen, some of these businesses that are improving their workflow? How has that translated to like either cost savings or improved efficiencies? And can is there like something quantifiable you can point to?
Yeah, so I mean, there's some organizations we're working with that were really, you know, through incorporating these tools and capabilities, we're starting to really see a ton of improvement in for example, if they're a marketing team, right? Going from ideating on content marketing ideas to then, you know, developing those as concepts, creating the long form pieces, optimizing those pieces for different platforms, repurposing them for different platforms, like, that's a lot of work, right? And for a small team in particular, like, so again, going back to that framework of, right, like brainstorming ideas, creating content, analyzing content, giving feedback, right? Like that's sort of you that's a workflow where you see all of those brought to bear, right? You're using like an AI powered search tool to like analyze data, analyze information about your industry, using that to brainstorm some ideas, draft some content, get feedback on that content from the perspective of different audiences. So we're there's a couple of it, of cases where we've come alongside folks like, for example, a marketing organization where we're able to at the very like on a conservative end take some of these workflows and go from like 1x to 1.5x pretty easily just by saying let's take the capabilities and that you've got and let's take some of the examples of what's already working within your organization and really start to accelerate that. A lot of times, my sort of personal view on this in terms of going back to what you mentioned about sort of like cost savings versus, sort of like outputs, efficiencies, right? Like my kind of personal view on this is that, the organizations that are viewing this as a cost-cutting tool, like while incredibly attractive, particularly in this sort of like very efficiency-oriented economy that we're operating in now with interest rates super high, like the cost savings are super attractive, right? But at the end of the day, I personally believe that the organizations that view this truly as pretty much solely as a cost-cutting tool, like they're going to get outcompeted by the organizations that are seeing this as an opportunity to do more with the same amount of headcount, right? And I think also those organizations that really just use this as a tool to, you bring on a bunch of AI tools, offload a bunch of human employees, like they're going to start to tank their brands as employers too. So where we really like to focus is really on, finding the opportunities to incorporate these tools so that you can do more, or so that your people can do more strategic work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're not the only person that's made that point to me. I think you're absolutely right that while you can cut costs using these tools, I think that cutting headcount not necessarily should be your first place you go. It should probably be, all right, we can say get 50% more productivity out of our team now. How should we use that 50% based on it? So we have existing cost, but now output is, there. So like how do we have a whole bunch of extra bandwidth? How do we go about that? So I completely agree. And I would assume that when you're looking into these organizations, having like the champion internally, super important. How do you identify a champion and what qualities are important to you as an external person to, having seen this across a bunch of different organizations over years, what are some of the commonalities in effective AI, like champions in organizations?
So I mean, I think we're actually working with a software organization that's kind of in the like expense management, like sort of finance, fintech, of sorts, industry where we're actually going through this process right now, right? We're kind of saying, okay, well, they've got a license already for a general purpose LLM tool. They've started to roll that out internally. They're starting to get some additional or, some initial early traction from certain users, right? But they're now saying, okay, well, how do we kind of really turn that up to 11, right? How do we get the whole organization using this tool, right? And so we're starting exactly there and saying, okay, let's identify some champions, right? Let's get some people bought in on this process, such that everything that we do from there is that made that much easier for the momentum we're able to generate with those individuals, right? And so who we're looking for in terms of establishing that early network of champions are ideally folks that are pretty visible within the organization, right? And I say visible, I think of visible in two ways. One is, are they visible to executive leadership, right? And are they looked up to by their peers, right? So these are typically like your sort of senior manager, director level folks, right? These are also honestly some of the people that are often most squeezed by, for time. So while running like a training and enablement program with them around a general purpose LLM tool, like it can be a little bit challenging to, basically get them to participate. Not because they don't want to, but just because they're already squeezed in multiple directions. But if you can get those folks bought in, right, very clearly able to model the changes in behavior that they're looking to see, then we find that it only makes things easier from there, right? Because then you have people that in the organization that are you that are trusted, that are well regarded, that are looked up to as individuals that can really help to drive this change, really the change in behavior, because that's really what this is, right? Across the rest of the organization. From there, certainly a good amount of fluency with the tech, like or just being fluent and comfortable working with new technology definitely helps. But honestly, like the fact where we are with generative AI adoption in general, like it's not because the tech's not good enough. The tech keeps getting better and better and better. This is increasingly more of a human problem. And so if you can find the people within the organization that are trusted, that are well regarded, that have the rapport with different parts of the organization, like that's really, the oftentimes I think the main driver of really what makes a good champion for these kinds of initiatives.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think company culture plays a role in this?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean I sort of like to think of it, the way I often like to talk about the work we're doing is that, it's like in some respects, this is almost like strategy and change management and behavior change work more than it is AI focused work, right? And that's particularly true of when a lot of what we're doing is around like strategy and implementation and training work. Because as an example, like how we go about a particular training program is entirely driven and entirely contextual to, well, what's the perception? What's the perception of AI within the organization? What's the culture of that pre-exists in introducing AI into the organization? I think there are a lot of there's a lot of kind of knock-on effects of incorporating AI that I don't think people are really quite I don't think people have quite wrapped their head around, right? So like as an example, like because we've seen this with our own tools and our own team, right? It's like we give people access to a bunch of AI tools, and then all of a sudden, instead of collaborating with each other, asking questions, bouncing feedback off of each other, they now have a tool that is their thought partner day in and day out, 24/7, right? They don't unless they really wanted to, they don't really need to connect with their peers as much. So, like, what does that mean about the culture of an organization? What does that mean for, organizations where human collaboration is maybe not in it may be good. There may be good patterns, there may be bad patterns, right? But it may not be intentional, right? And so I think that is something that you really need to start thinking about in terms of how you are, what you're after, and how you're going about introducing these tools.
Yeah, absolutely. I would assume, as I know from people I've spoken with, that a lot of people that are just worried that it's gonna take their job, they're gonna be replaced. It's not gonna be, I feel like that. I feel like the two main concerns I hear from people, and I just like I don't mean highly educated, informed people. I just mean people, is that it's gonna kill everybody. Or it's going to take my job. And like that seems to be the extent of the concern, which I mean honestly goes back to literacy and understanding of the issue at large. But like I think that folks coming up now, where you look at these large organizations cutting headcount in the coding departments, because I think, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, is like if you were asked by a parent, a friend of yours maybe had a kid, a parent like 7, 10 years ago, and they were asking, oh man, where like what should we foster in the kid? Where should we go to make sure that they're safe and have a future? I know I did it. It's like coding and IT was absolutely an area. Computer science, study that. But now you look at the demand shrinking drastically. Now I know a lot of these tools aren't like writing code really, really, really well, but they're doing it, and it's having a like maybe not at like an enterprise level from a what you need, but they're doing it pretty well. So how do you address that, and how can, like, as a leader, how, like, within organizations, how could you foster the culture and prepare your organization's culture to ensure that people will adopt these tools as opposed to view them as a threat and not use them.
Yeah, no, I mean it's a really tricky one. I think this is where, you've got to have leaders taking the first steps, right? Like you've got to have leaders very visibly in the role of modeling the behaviors that you are asking for from the rest of your team, right? And because otherwise it's, you're not really going to be like, I think it's probably not like it's probably not maybe not the most like advanced sort of like unique answer, but I mean at the end of the day, like you shouldn't as a leader, you shouldn't be asking anything of your team that you're not willing to do yourself, right? Because folks need to see you as a leader, embracing this change, and also the benefit to you as a leader taking the first step. Is that you then yourself are actually going to be able to stay current and stay fluent with what's actually happening on the ground, right? Because, it's something I say pretty regularly on a lot of the calls and the meetings we're having is like, really the only way to keep up with this stuff is to be a pretty regular user of any particular tool, right? So that's one thing, right? The other thing is too, is that it's like, and this gets to be a tricky one, right? But because I think that people, so I guess when I say what gets to be a tricky one is that like, finding ways to make clear that, this, w why we are doing this, right? Why as an organization are we seeing a need to adopt these tools? And it's gotta be a better reason than we want to just be more efficient. We want to hit our targets. Like, because honestly, it's like, even if you, even when you are being clear and thoughtful about those reasons, people still, unfortunately, given the climate that we've had in the last couple of years, I think it's very natural, I think, for particularly in some organizations, for folks to be skeptical of, what it means and why organizations would incorporate generative AI tools and capabilities into their work, right? So I think that's where, like, first, leaders have to take the first step. Two, you've got to get clear on, okay, well, why are we doing this, right? Well, and ideally you'd relate that to your values as an organization, right? We're doing this so that we can serve our stakeholders in a better and more impactful way, right? And then from there, like, make try and in my view, like this isn't really like a complete set of steps unless you are also, as part of incorporating these tools into your folks, into your team's work, you're making clear what you expect sort of the new behaviors to be, right? Which gives people a specificity in what they're driving towards, right? If you're asking me to do more strategic work, what work is that, right? But also too, it makes clear that it's like, okay, this is not just some hollow ask or push for efficiency, right? Wherein eventually, we may end up downsizing part of the organization, right? Get clear about what those strategic imperatives are, what those values are, so that people, can I honestly, I think, just trust a little bit more. What is it that I'm going to be doing in place of the things I was doing before? Right? Which then anchors, I think it serves as a stronger anchor to, okay, well, why are, what's my role? What's my job going to look like a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, and so on.
Yeah, bold of you to assume most people that our ideas and what we think it's going to look like are actually going to play out. Because I think when you look at the rate of change, yeah, it's not going. I don't think anybody can conceive of what's going to happen beyond like 36 months. After that, it's all like just guesses.
Agreed.
But I do love that you mentioned, specificity around it. I think that that's super important. I think having like a new AI toy is just a toy, right? But I just kept thinking when you were talking, I just couldn't stop thinking about SMART goals, like specific, measurable, attainable. I forget the other ones. Time sensitive is one. But you're absolutely right. We can't you can't bring a tool into your environment without an idea of what you want to use it for, right? I also think that like giving people access to these tools without that is first, it's setting them up for failure, but it's second, it's also, giving them a hammer, a saw, some wood, and some nails, and telling them to go build a house without giving them any clear idea of what a house looks like. Or, getting in your car and trying to get somewhere. But if you don't know where you're driving when you start driving, like that just makes for an incredibly inefficient, wasteful trip, unless driving around in your car is where you're going, in which case you're killing it, right? But but when you think about the small mid-sized organizations that you're talking about now, and that you're working with a lot, Peter, how do you advise organizations to assess which tool they should use, right? Because for me, like OpenAI, ChatGPT, Claude, Llama, all of them, they're all kind of the same. Gemini, like they may do certain very niche things better than the other one, but they're pretty much the same. From an output perspective and input perspective, I deal with them and interact with them very similarly. So how should how should you even begin to assess what you need? And obviously cost is going to be a part of that, but not all of it.
No, I mean, I think it's going back to what I said earlier about, like, if you don't already have some sort of general purpose LLM tool implemented and enabled broadly across your organization, start there, right? And I honestly, like, I wouldn't, going to your point about like some of the convergence between features and capabilities, it's like I almost, certainly, like, as you said, some of them are better than others, but it's like I would focus more on velocity rather than ultimately, is this one tool better at the, better at these specific niche things, right? Oftentimes, there are going to be a specific set of tools that are going to be easier for your organization to work with from a governance and compliance standpoint. And I would say, okay, well, again, if you're a Microsoft organization, it's going to be Copilot. If you're already a Google organization, it's going to be Gemini, right? And I would focus first on just like getting some of those tools in there in a limited pilot, that, and potentially even doing a little bit of a bake off to get a sense of, okay, well, which of these tools are for the teams that we're seeing the most potential and value, for incorporating these capabilities into their work, like, which of these tools are going to be favored by those actual team members, right? From there, it's like there's the space is going to be changing quite a bit, as you've said, as I think we've all seen, right? So even the tools that are, even the tools as they are today, it's pretty hard to predict, like, in a year from now, which of these is going to be the best at any particular thing that you might need. Your organization is also going to change, right? So that would actually be my sort of maybe like counterintuitive sort of answer to this, is that, like, if you haven't already gotten a tool, like a particular tool, firmly adopted by your team, don't worry so much about which tool initially. Just start there, get your folks using this on a regular basis. And then that is going to naturally lead to the kind of taste and preference for what tools, what capabilities are really going to work for you, that is going to help you kind of help further the sort of the next chapter of this.
No, I agree. So get it in the hands of your people and have them drive innovation from the ground up. Pretty much is where we are. No, that makes a lot of sense. No, it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you look at like a lot of these companies that, are making the news, folks like a CoreWeave, right? Who has the AI, essentially, as I understand it, it's like a GPU platform, where you can access their compute, to do your AI development, things like that. I know there's a bunch of other ones out there, looking at, but we don't need any of that. Just get the basics, start with the fundamentals, and then figure out how you're going to use it in your organization and go from there. Because the argue's out whether or not argument is still out whether or not VHS or Betamax is going to win, right? Is that is pretty much is where we are. Like, we don't know. Yeah, I do find it interesting that we don't have like a ubiquitous term for AI yet, like you do, like you Google stuff, right? I used to TiVo things on my DV on my shitty DVR all the time. Pardon my language. But like we don't have that. Kind of like like you Uber, like you don't have a we don't have like an accepted word for AI that's tied to a company similar to a lot of these other examples. So I think it's really interesting to watch all this develop.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I mean, I think anyone sort of you, I think you kind of alluded to this earlier. It's like anyone that presumes to know where this space is going to be, and 12, even 12, I would say 12, let alone 24, 36 months. Like I think they're more likely than not going to be very wrong.
I think there'll be a couple of people out here that look prophetic, but they're just the ones that got lucky. Right? It's just prophetic. It's not like you can see the future. But I know totally get kind of where we're going. How like but as a like as a leader of these orgs, like what because you need to retool your workforce. What outside of getting them access to the tools, right? What should you or what do you, advise folks think about from a skill set perspective? How do you arm your people?
So I mean, I think the first thing is you arm your people by like creating conditions for them to be successful, right? Obviously, goes without saying, right? So what do I really mean, right? I think that's where you try to avoid too much change too fast. Like, yes, you absolutely do need to get started, right? But what we advocate for is really just, pick one tool, go deep on that tool, right? Get people really using and adopting that tool. And then from there, it'll start to get easier to figure out what comes next. One, in part because your people are actually, if you do this right, they're gonna have more time on their hands. And for two, because there'll a lot of the general thinking, like going back to what we were talking about, sort of literacy, a lot of the general thinking, the problem solving, a good prompt gets used in an LLM, it gets used in an automation platform. The core fundamentals of how these things work are pretty transferable to a broad set of different tools, right? So I would say first and foremost, just start with, go deep on one, right? Build up a regular pattern of usage from there. But then also, you kind of need to look at the incentive structure. You need to look at sort of the social and human elements to this. Like, are you having leaders running demo sessions of like what people are doing and what people are experimenting with, exploring? Are you having those leaders actually demo things that they're trying out, right? So it's kind of a there's sort of a couple of pieces to it, right? It's creating the conditions, but it's also respecting the human element to this, and recognizing people that like really need to see their leaders adopting and stepping into the changes in behavior that you're looking to see from them. But then I think the other piece to this as well is it's really, really important to find ways to reward and incentivize some of the experimentation that in terms of once you have a particular tool, or a particular capability, or once you have a particular tool implemented, once you have folks using that, I think it's if once you've given some people some understanding of what responsible use looks like, then create some excitement, create a little buzz around figuring out where other people can use this stuff. Let people's ingenuity and creativity come into play.
An idea I just had, literally based on what you said, is have an organizational leader like do a weekly webinar featuring like the innovative way that a team member used AI to solve a specific problem or whatever, right? Something like that, where you're not only highlighting, hey, this is how we're using it, you're giving a spotlight to somebody that was innovative and doing something cool. But I also think that a lot of the success of this these implementation is going to entirely depend on the expectation of the organization and s properly setting up those upfront metrics of how do we even define success here, right? What are we looking to do with this? What are we looking to solve? And how are we going to use this to get better, right? And that get better can be a lot of different stuff, right? Can be get write better code, turn, squash bugs faster from a QA process perspective, do a better job with research, making research faster. But like put something measurable around it so you have something to define success against.
No, absolutely. And also, I mean, ideally those measures of success are not just on the business, right? Ideally, you're also looking at, okay, well, how are people enjoying their work, right? What's the level of employee satisfaction before you introduce an AI tool and after it, right? Are you effectively in how you're rolling out these tools? Are you effectively speaking to the concerns and challenges that some of your team members are kind of citing and telling you about?
No,
So for sure.
absolutely. So I got one more question for you.
What's
One
up?
more question for you, Peter. What piece of advice would you all, give to leaders who are hesitant to like start the train?
So we were actually just chatting with an organization in financial services about this last week, right? They sort of posed that sort of same question of like, okay, should we start to dive in now, or should we wait for this to mature a little bit more, right? And I would say that that notion of, okay, is it ready yet? You're not going to get this sort of perfect binary answer of yes, it's mature enough, or no, it's not, right? Because the fact of the matter is that it's already mature enough to handle a whole host of different workflows and scenarios within your organization, right? Is it good for all of them? No, absolutely not. And you shouldn't use it there, right? But there are absolutely cases, just, you've seen them already, just with the number of different organizations across sectors, with different logos that are starting to say, hey, we're getting some real benefit out of this. This whole dichotomy of like, is it mature enough or not? I would set that aside, right? I would instead start focusing on getting familiar, getting comfortable using these tools every day, because that's the only way you're going to keep up with any of this stuff, right? And then from there, how we often talk about it is, okay, well, if you could all of a sudden imagine your organization was 1.5 times more productive, like everyone on your team, or for example, you could add an extra 50% to your 50% more team members, right? What would you do with that, right? You probably have a pretty good idea of what you'd do in either of those cases, right? What would you start tackling? What goals would you start shooting for, right? Within those goals, there are certain workflows where if you start kind of winding the clock back to today, where you are right now in your organization, there are certain things that are just not possible based on the productivity of your team members based on the headcount you have. But there are certain workflows, right, that can be supplemented by the tools that are increasingly, as we've been talking about, more and more available, right? So the question is more just finding, okay, well, which parts of those workflows is AI, quote unquote, good enough at? And then really starting to experiment and identify those constraints and gradually change the way that that work gets done with the buy-in, with the engagement from the team members that are going to be impacted by that. So that you can really start deploying the AI there and reallocating that very, very precious human capital, right, to some of the higher order, more strategic functions, right? And so, but that's really, I'd say, the biggest piece of advice is that it's like, don't get stuck start don't get stuck at the starting line on this, right? Because it is absolutely ready for you to start diving in, and the benefits on the other side of that are pretty massive, right? For organizations that, like, when you go sort of at different levels of the org chart, right? Like for individual contributors, like this is the opportunity to give your people an opportunity to learn cutting edge skills, right? For them to grow in their role, for them to maintain job security, right? For managers, you get to give them an opportunity to actually hit their targets without burning out their key team members. And at the executive level, you get to basically be the one that helps the organization exceed your whatever your annual targets are, and ultimately become a leader in your industry as it's rapidly changing, right? So there's a ton of opportunity, but you really just got to dive in and really and do so thoughtfully and safely, of course. But like the jumping in is the biggest part.
Yeah, and if you don't know how to jump, you can reach out to Peter. He'll be awesome being able to have conversations with you and your organization. Of course, his contact and his LinkedIn is going to be in the episode description. But this is absolutely what you do, is you help organizations figure out how to jump and where to jump and what to jump into.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming on, Peter.
Thanks a bunch, Nick. It's been a real joy.
But everybody, thank you for listening to Robots and Red Tape. I hope you're having a great day.